Hello and welcome to Wise Women, the Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experiences of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Happy New Year.
Well, it's New Year's Eve.
Yes.
But that's another spurious date, really, isn't it?
Totally, yep. Introduced by Julius Caesar the god Janus, the sun god. So, I mean, in some ways spot on, but yeah, also a spurious date. But you know what? After we've been talking about the whole dates and months and all the rest of it thing, I was thinking how extraordinary it is that on the one hand, we've got, you know, dates made by Caesars related to Christianity, other religions have their other things and all the rest of it. And what an amazing mishmash it is, because on the other hand, we've also got the days of the week. So just to go wind back again, we've got January after Janus, the god.
Yes.
And then, and we've got lots of the months are around various different, mostly Roman gods.
Yeah.
But then we've got Monday after the moon, I can't remember what Tuesday is.
Yeah.
Wednesday for Woden,
yes.
Wotan.
Yes.
Thursday, Thorsday for Thurs,
yeah,
for Thor. Friday, Friggsday for Frigga. Saturday, Saturn.
Saturn.
Sunday for the sun.
Yeah.
What's Tuesday?
Well, it is Mars, but I'll have to look that up. Keep waffling, I'll look it up.
But just, isn't it amazing that we've still got, here we are, 2022 in a minute. We're naming the days of the week and, you know, the months of the year.
Anglo-Saxon god of war Tiu, T-I-U, also known as Tyr, T-Y-R, the Vikings.
Okay. Yeah.
Ha! So that would be Mars, wouldn't it? Mars Day, yes. Because it's Mardi in French.
Uh-huh.
Lundi Mardi,
Mercredi. Yeah. Okay, Lundi also being Moonday Lelou.
Yeah.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
It is a wonderful mishmash, isn't it? Yes. No white privilege. Well, quite a bit probably. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, that's a thing worth knowing as well, though, that whilst it's very easy to both blame the Romans for everything and acknowledge that they did do good things, it's also worth knowing that apparently the latest research says that something like a third, I believe it was, that might be an overstatement, but I think I'm right in saying that something like a third of the Roman army were people of colour.
Yes, they would have been.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so this idea that it's, that the origins of white rule
come from Rome
are also to be found in Rome. But then having said that, maybe they do because the Roman army were mostly forced conscripts.
Yeah.
And maybe the leaders were all very not people of colour. I don't know actually. So maybe I retract that statement now that I've said it out loud.
It's probably both.
It's interesting and maybe it is both.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. Well, we have appropriated so much. I mean, you can't go into a church without seeing a blonde white Jesus, really, can you?
Probably not. Well, certainly not around here anyway.
No. Definitely not. So it's all very subtle, I think. It's all very subtle. But New Year's, new beginnings, there is, whether or not you agree with New Year's resolutions, there's a great waft of energy that goes around in this country of starting anew at that point, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although I know I have ranted about this before, not on this podcast, but at length in my blog, which I haven't written for a year and a half or something. But anyway, about what I perceive as a kind of onslaught of almost community-sponsored self-hatred.
Yes.
Which happens at this time of year.
Which is get slim, isn't it?
Yeah, everyone's got to go on a diet.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, yes, it is not good for your health to be overweight. Absolutely not. If you are overweight, there's every chance that you're going to be increasing your risk of heart disease, diabetes, all sorts of other things. But the ruthless way in which, I guess women in particular, historically, but it does seem to be everyone these days, the kind of the powers that be of our cultural culturally manifested media just go, look at you, you're fat, you're disgusting.
And here's the answer.
And here's the answer. Either
only buy, 1999, yeah, the first exactly. instalment.
Either buy this thing or sign up for this whatever.
Yeah.
Or, but just you are fat and disgusting and you need to be thin and that will make you holy and happy. And it's I find it awful. Mm. And it's particularly insidiously awful because on the one hand, that may be true. But the attitude of self-loathing that seems to underpin it and seems to be encouraged, is that's no way to begin anything.
No, and it's so bad for us. I was watching Bruce Lipton, you know Bruce mm-hmm. Lipton?
Biology of belief. Yeah.
Yes, molecular biologist, that's right. Yeah. Dr. Bruce Lipton. He was talking about COVID. It was an interview about a year ago. And he just spoke so clearly and eloquently. It's on YouTube. I'll see if I can put the link on the podcast. And of course, his teaching is, and it's purely scientifically backed up, which is that the nucleus of the cell is the reproductive aspect, not the brain of the cell. It's the external skin of the cell that is the brain of the cell, and it responds to everything else. So if you are feeling self-hatred or if you're feeling fear, you are locking down your immune system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And hatred locks down the immune system quite severely. Self-hatred, it really, really does.
Yeah.
I've never found a single woman with fibromyalgia who loved herself.
Oh.
Mind you, I don't find a lot of women who love themselves anyway. But you know, whenever I talk to one of them and we talk about what they're doing, they're always doing so much for everybody else.
Yeah.
Always. And fibromyalgia, like ME, is something like, me, look after me, take a bit of care of me, I think. Well, it's so it seems to me. Yeah. There's so much stuff. But what he was saying was, with this pandemic, which of course is still going on, and everybody's got terribly excited about the Omicron variant, and he was saying the way the immune system works is that it was designed for saber-toothed tigers.
Mm-hmm. Run!
Run, now.
Yeah.
So when you're in fear, I'm sure you all know this listening, all the energy goes to your hands and your legs and your muscles to help you run mm-hmm. or fight.
Is there not three possible responses?
Yes, there's fight, flight, and freeze. Yes, there is freeze. But it's still things that get... Freeze is to become invisible.
Mm-hmm.
But it still holds the immune system's attention in those areas because to make you freeze is just as hard as to make you run.
Yeah.
And once, if you're in that mode, the immune system cannot also protect you from internal attack.
Mm-hmm.
So the more people are frightened about COVID, the more likely they are to get sick from it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying the majority of people who aren't frightened, and I'm just quoting him, I'm not saying it's true, it's just to make us think, but I personally think he's got a lot of validity. He said the more frightened you are of COVID, the more likely you are to be sick of it. And the more you are not bothered means that when it comes, your immune system will just say, I can handle that.
Yeah.
And he said the majority of people who aren't frightened are barely symptomatic. And it's the fear that we're driving ourselves with, which is causing the damage. And we also know about the mental health problems from lockdown.
Totally.
And it's a moot point. Do you tell people this because it might frighten them more or what? But we really are living in an age that's on the edge of its seat with all this more information to frighten us.
Yeah, and then conversely, more information that could soothe us. I mean, I think it's Bruce Lipton's research, but actually maybe it's not, around how completely our expectations of our experience delineate the outcomes.
Yes.
So there were these amazing researches done around the experience of extremely high stress on the biology of two different factions of people. So the first is those who are in extremely high stress situations and jobs who believe that stress is beneficial and that high stress means, hey, high worth, high income, high status, all is groovy, baby.
Yeah.
And then this other group who are like, oh my God, it's so stressful, I'm bound to have a heart attack and die. And how totally their expectations were being lived out in their experience. So those who believed that high stress meant high status, high income, goody-goody, were really healthy in their high stress thing. And those who believed that the high stress was going to be the death of them had heart disease, stomach ulcers, you know, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
And that his thing, he called, I mean, he wrote that book, The Biology of Belief.
Yes.
Our beliefs, or as Carolyn Mace would put it, our, how does she say it? Our, it's, oh my gosh, she's got such a pat phrase that basically means our history, our narrative, become our biography becomes our biology.
Yes.
And it's not the biography of what happened, it's the biography of what have we turned the story into, what did we make it mean?
Yes.
Our biography becomes
and
our
the fact
biology.
That we keep repeating it as well.
Yeah.
Repeating the story of the wounds.
Yes.
Making them bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's
like
so tempting.
Gnawing away at them when you're a dog.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah. So Bruce Lipton, we highly recommend him. So if you do anything along the lines of New Year's resolutions or something, drop the fear.
Yeah.
Turn away from everything that makes you fear. Turn away. And I wrote a blog quite recently saying I used to be really anti-Mairi Whitehouse for the simple reason that my name was Maggie Whitehouse and I worked in the media. And every day people would say, any relation to Mary? Any relation to Mary? And I was in my early 20s and I didn't want to be associated with Mairi Whitehouse in those days.
You're going to have to remind me who on earth
she
Mairi Whitehouse was.
She founded the National Viewers and Listeners Association. She was the great campaigner against sex and violence on the BBC.
Ah, yes, I remember.
She's one of the great failures. She got nothing achieved. But you know she was right.
BBC's full of bloody sex and violence,
that's
for sure.
She was right. She was actually right. And part of me thinking, maybe I've got to pick up this baton in a funny way. Because the amount of violence and stuff that we take as absolutely normal on the TV. And what I would actually recommend with all these detective shows, and yes, again, I do watch a few of them, I do admit it, we should have smell-o-vision.
Why?
Because
why?
if they transmitted what death smells like,
oh God, can you imagine now the biology of watching that as an experience?
Yeah, but it would stop us.
Whew, I mean, yeah, I don't watch it anyway. But
no, but it would stop us.
Would it just traumatize the people who watch that stuff even more deeply than they're already traumatized?
Well, maybe you're right, but I think it might be a bit of both. As in, you know, if you actually had to smell what is being depicted there, which made it real, because sense smell is so much more powerful than we think it is. It's so evocative, it goes so deep, you don't even consciously register a smell, but it might change everything in your biology because of a memory, because of the beliefs around that smell. But
I think it might just desensitize us. I mean, for in all those things also, there is always vast oodles of fear.
Yeah.
And smell, fear has a smell also.
Yes.
And can you imagine if we were so desensitized to the smell of death and the smell of fear in the same way that we are desensitized to the sight of them by watching that stuff? I mean, apparently detective things are Britain's favorite television.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Extraordinary, isn't it? Though I think you're probably right, and I think I'm also right too. So it's one of those yes and things. I think the shock of it might wake us up a little bit, because we are so, we watch all this murder and death, but it's so sanitized.
Yeah, but wasn't there also somebody did some research? I really am fishing this out of the annals, the anus. Things that I've known. Well, I remember being really concerned when my kids were little. You know, I have three sons. Your average boys these days, and certainly in those days, like to play on, you know, twiddly things where all the exercise you get is with your thumbs because you're on a screen having a war or being James Bond or whatever it is. And I was really concerned. You know, I'm very much not the person that wants to watch violence on a screen. I do not understand how it is that violence is entertainment. But I also do understand, you know, we've been having violence as entertainment for thousands of years. Look at the gladiators. Look at the way that executions used to be considered a great day out for the family. But there was this, what I found really reassuring, piece of research which in fact, I think it was many pieces of research, which concluded that even at very young ages, we completely understand the difference between a TV show and reality, but actually, and that the one can be entertaining, and that were that to be reality, it would obviously be far from entertaining, mm-hmm. and that even from a very, very, very young age, we, our bodies, totally understand this is not real, and therefore actually we're not desensitized and we're not traumatized. But what that same research did come up with is that reality shows and soap operas, especially the daily ones, where you are, in theory, having a kind of daily update and insight mm. into the lives of individuals and a community, such as at that time it was EastEnders,
mm.
apparently they do traumatise because our bodies can't tell the difference because it's daily. And it's the same thread and the same stories. And to our bodies, those people become real.
Yes. And the celebrities who play them become our property.
Do they, yeah.
In many, many, many ways, yes. Yeah. I think it's, again, it's this yes and. You see, Lion, if he watches something, he watches, loves NASCAR races and he loves the crashes and things. I can't watch them.
Yeah.
I started watching them in solidarity with him and managed to get somebody smashed into my car within 3 weeks.
Yeah, okay. I get that.
So some people are sensitive and some people aren't sensitive. And I don't want to be a Mary Whitehouse going around saying we should stop these things, but I just think we should think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And as ever, exercise our sovereign right to say no, thank you very much. You know, it's fine for Lion to watch that stuff if he wants to. It's fine for you to not watch that stuff if you don't.
Yeah.
Same happens in our house. You know, there's a lot of stuff that Fergus is very happy to watch. And that he will immediately pause it if I come into the room and go, you're not going to want to watch this.
Yeah.
Because it's violence and I don't want to watch it.
Yeah. Yes, I've got a little rule now, which is I will never watch any TV programme with violence on a Sunday. Now, that may sound very silly and very trite and a very small thing, but it's important. And it inconveniences us.
Mm.
It's not convenient because every now and then we think, oh, we can watch so-and-so movie if we want to watch the telly on a Sunday night. Usually we'll read nowadays, but and then we go, oh, you know, you don't want to watch that because, you know, and sometimes he's lovely about it and other days he finds it a bit frustrating. And my training is give in to the man. So it's a very good exercise to say, no, I've made a commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Very small, one day a week commitment, but it is a commitment.
Oh my god! Sorry, let me jump out my skin. Good lord, you're supposed to be on silent. I'm so sorry.
Ladies and gentlemen, we introduce Susie Crockford.
Whoa, that's hilarious. If only we were whatever it is when you've got visuals as well.
Well, also it was interesting. We were talking about being shocked, weren't we? By the universe having its little jokes. I can shock you with anything, honey.
Well, it sort of can. Apparently, the reason I have such a strong startle reflex is because I was born so prematurely, and evidently that's a thing. Very premature babies have, for life, a very strong startle reflex.
Well, I didn't know either of those things. You were premature then?
Like 2 months premature.
Wow.
It's a complete and utter miracle that I'm here.
What happened?
So, I was born in 1963, so that youthful listener is an entirely different world from the point of view of medicine.
Yeah.
And my mother she got preeclampsia. She went into toxic shock. I had to be born by cesarean at only 7 months in the womb,
mm.
which in 1963 was pretty much a certain death.
It was, yeah.
So they were, but it was not remotely certain. I mean, it was pretty much decided that one of us would die.
Yeah.
And the question was, do we try and save the mother or save the baby?
Yeah.
Bizarrely, my father was asked, shall we save the mother or
son? Oh, God, as they did in those days, yes.
And he had just converted to Catholicism, and Catholicism has got a teaching on this, evidently, which is that you save the baby. And he knew it because he'd just converted, whereas I'm sure 99.9% of other people would have no idea that there was a teaching on that.
Yeah.
And so he felt that he had to say save the baby. And then some pillock, probably him, told my mum this when she finally woke up. So of course she never forgave him.
No.
How could you? And anyway, the nurse, the midwife, on that ward, on that day, on the 17th of November, 1963, had literally, that was her first shift after England's first ever training in what to do in situations of preeclampsia and toxic shock.
Wow.
So I had, the one of the very few people in the country who had the knowledge it would take to save me. And to save my mum, but awfully, terribly for her, because they thought they were sewing up someone who was probably
going to die,
about to die.
Yeah,
they didn't do a particularly good job.
No,
they managed to sew part of her womb into her stomach muscles.
Oh,
and even though she managed to, after me, have my brother, 17 months there is between us, she then had, you know, problems related to womb and bleeding until she was well into her 40s, when finally a gynecologist took her seriously enough to investigate and discovered, good God, how is it that you've managed to carry on like this? This is outrageous.
Yeah.
And they gave her a hysterectomy, which I think for her was one of the best things that ever happened to her.
Yeah.
But how on earth did we get onto that?
Not entirely sure.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Trauma, I think. Trauma.
Oh, being premature.
Being premature, right, yeah. And startle reflex. It was your phone.
Yes.
It was your phone that gave us the whole topic.
Yeah, yeah. And though, but that has been, the fact that I was premature and so soon premature has also been the most extraordinary blessing in my life, because I have had, actually, quite often, it's come up around me, oh, a baby's incredibly premature, and and everyone going, oh, they're going to die, it's awful.
Yeah.
Including my own godsons. They were born at 26 weeks or something, I can't remember.
Mm.
I can't remember, that's probably wrong. But so early. But I was just able to really hold the truth of, that's not necessarily a death sentence. Yes. Especially not 53 years later. If it wasn't for me, it's so not for them. And they're running around, nearly five awesome, bloody, incredible little people. Yeah. And I know two others, also twin boys, actually, born so early. And they are so fine and dandy and cute. And I only see them by Facebook. But, you know, it's all, there's always the hidden blessing in any of these weirdnesses, isn't there?
Yes, there's always a reason why and something that comes through from it. Yes, absolutely. Going back to the mother and baby thing, in Judaism, you save the mother.
Really? Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah. And a woman is permitted to have an abortion if her mental health is challenged, is being threatened as well in Judaism. So it's odd, isn't it? Different faiths have different kindnesses different strengths. But in my own experience with dealing with mothers who've had both miscarriages and abortions, the same soul has come back later.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that I, you know, abortions are not a brilliant idea. They have a very bad effect on you mentally, emotionally, psychologically, even if you don't think they do, they do, because you've started something and then you stop it. But it is wonderful to know that you cannot kill the potential of a human life with an abortion. You've just postponed it. That soul, if it needs to incarnate, will come back either later to you or to somebody else. If a soul has a destiny to be born on this planet, it will be born on this planet.
Yeah. Yeah, and that I know that offers a great deal of reassurance to people, not just from abortions, but also those people who've had the misfortune to have many miscarriages and then never a child, to know that that child was born and that will probably appear in their life somewhere.
Yes. Do you remember the killing of James Bulger? His mother had another child, another boy, about 4 years later, and she was quoted saying, it's James all over again.
Yeah.
And it will have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you have miscarried, or you know somebody who has, or if you've had terminations and regretted it, always understand that child will come back. And have I told the story of the angel letter of the mother with the son in South Africa?
You have.
I have. Oh my yes.
goodness. I quote that story in part of my teaching around death and
I'm so glad.
I absolutely love that story.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. Briefly, if you haven't heard, it's about a mother who had an abortion, never forgave herself, wrote an angel letter to the soul of the child, and her eldest son contacted her the next day and revealed that he was that child. I couldn't even tell the story without crying.
It's so beautiful.
Yes.
So just the bit that got me was that she has spent the night in sort of agony saying, yes. I'm sorry. And he called her up the next day yes. going, are you all right?
Yes.
Because all night I dreamed that you were saying, I'm sorry.
Yes, I tried to kill you. Yes. Yes.
Oh, I just think it's...
Yes, it's the most beautiful story.
It really is, yeah.
And it changed her life.
Yeah.
Because she'd had 21 years of guilt.
Yeah.
Yeah, and... No, this is greater than this. It's not about just killing a baby for your convenience. No, you can't do that, actually. And also, the selection process of when you are pregnant, possibly, that soul knows it's not going to come to term with you.
Yeah, maybe. Hey, Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year. We're really cheering you up here, aren't we? So I take it you don't do New Year's resolutions.
No, I really don't, actually.
No.
I mean, apart from anything else, this isn't really the New Year to me. No. It's the date. I realise that, you know, now we're in 2021, tomorrow we'll be in 2022. I accept that this is consensual reality in the West.
Except for those who say, actually, no, we shouldn't have started at one, we had to start at zero, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't come across that one. Oh. But anyway... No, it's I do my resolutions at Samhain, and then I again do the whole planting of the seed thing that I did at solstice, and I guess at this, you know, but absolutely babbling. No, I mostly ignore New Year's Eve.
I shall sort of celebrate on the 4th of January because that's new moon, and I shall start consecrating the willow tree in the garden as a moon tree.
Yay! A beauty it is.
It is a gorgeous tree, isn't it? Yeah. Yes, and I've been asking its permission, and it's okay with the idea, but it was going a bit, what?
You want me to be a what?
I just want to put pretty things on you and bless you, and use you as landing lights for angels. And it went, I can do that.
So, gosh, angels. Haven't considered angels at all around this whole Christianity, New Year, what's it called, Christmas thing. Sorry. Apart from Gabriel, who obviously was the messenger, but this is right, isn't it? Mm. Gabriel brought the message to Mary telling her she was going to be pregnant.
Yeah.
Who are the three angels that turn up, or do they? Am I making that up? Are there three kings and three shepherds and three angels, or only three kings and three shepherds?
No, there's no numbering whatsoever. It doesn't even say three wise men. The word's magi, which means astrologer, priest. Mm. But it's translated as king to make them more important, I think. But it says they brought... wise men came from the east and they brought gifts.
And did gold,
frankincense, and myrrh. An angel showed... An archangel showed up for the shepherds... And a choir of angels sang to them.
Ah, there we are. I knew there was angels.
So that was probably Gabriel again.
Okay, but they don't. That's sort of slightly beside the point, or not really. Is there something very important we should be paying attention to? I'm always intrigued by your angels.
Well, angels to me are the cosmic civil service. They're the ones.
Oh my God!
I know it sounds desperate.
You might be about to be struck down.
They're the ones who do the work.
Right.
The ones that make the world turn and the planets move and nature come up and each planet has an angel and each human has an angel and each plant has an angel. So they're not human. People tend to think they're human. So they're the aspects of the design that come closest to the earth that almost become personal, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm rather fond of angels. If you probably won't notice, but whenever you come into my office, there are four primary angels on the walls.
I have absolutely noticed.
Yeah, Uriel to the north, Michael to the south, Raphael to the east, and Gabriel to the west.
Uh-huh.
Each one representing one of the four Gospels, one of the four elements. And what do they mean to me? I mean, I do whole courses on this, so it's really difficult to get it succinct at 29 minutes on a podcast.
Oh, sorry. Okay, well, don't be succinct. Maybe we'll talk about angels another time. But I do quickly want to know, as you've just named it, what are their elements and why?
Oh, Uriel is earth.
And he's the north?
And he's the winter.
Okay.
And Michael is the south and the summer. Raphael is the east and the spring. And Gabriel is the west and the autumn.
Okay. And water.
And water, yes.
Okay, so your angels are in the same places as my elements and seasons.
Yes.
In my way of being.
Yes. So I'm just honouring the spirits of the seasons in a way that was more acknowledged by the Judeo-Christian tradition. It's the same, but
Well, it isn't even for all Wiccans. I mean, when that lovely chap, I can't remember his name, asked us about the whole...
Oh yes,
seasons
John.
And all the rest of it. Yeah, it's not necessarily the same. And even amongst just it's so not the same at that. Even amongst the peoples of North America, so the indigenous tribes of Turtle Island don't even have the same things in the same place.
Right.
For example, amongst some, I don't know enough about it to be able to name who. It's not. The north isn't even what's important. It's like we are the spirit of the northeast and the yes. spirit of the southwest, etc. So there, I don't think there's any form of kind of unilateral agreement on what's where.
Well, that does make sense, really, because nearly all the spirituality I teach is horribly northern hemisphere
centric.
Yeah. So it's. Again, white privileged in a way.
Yeah, but I mean that's also the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah, yes, it is. I'm constantly on my Kabbalah group, which meets on Tuesdays, and when we did the solstice mass, of course, one of us is Australian, and right. one of us is from New Zealand, and bless them, they turn up at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning to attend these meetings, which
in their shorts, ready for their Barbie.
Yeah, ready for their Barbie. That's right. So it's always really important for me to sort of talk to them and question them how these things feel for them, because it's completely different.
Yeah. Gosh, that would be so interesting, wouldn't it, to know if you know, dear listener, or indeed are in a place in the Southern Hemisphere. I would so love to hear about how the directions work for you.
Yes. Absolutely. I would love to.
That would be fascinating.
Yeah, because there will be shamans. Well, South American shamans, of course, are the legendary ones, the ones that seem to have started most of the shamanistic knowledge of the world.
Except that the word shaman comes from the Tungus people of Siberia.
That's true. We've mentioned that before, yes.
And that it is shaman, not shaman. Sorry, Maggie. One day I'll come to your house and we'll speak together and I won't tell you off for anything. Shortly after that, hell will freeze over.
Well, aren't we lucky I'm in a religion that teaches humility?
And compassion for the cob shite opposite you. Anyway, with that, for those of you for whom it is the new year,
yes,
we wish you a happy one. And please try and make sure that all the things you wish for are coming from a place of the longings of your heart,
yes,
and not some kind of judgment.
Yeah. And please walk towards the joy. Don't Yay. Walk away from the fear. Forget the fear. Walk towards the joy. Because when you walk away from it, you still look back over your shoulder like Lot's wife. And she was turned into a pillar of salt, which is Natramura in homeopathy, which is the remedy which is for looking back and not being able to transmute the past.
Mm-hmm.
So let's walk into joy.
A very joyful 2022.
Or whatever the year is.
Or whatever the billing year is. Yes, oh my goodness, we're back there. A joyful new calendar to you.
Yes. Have a nice new start. See you next week.